It's September 4th and 1988. We have with us Bob Barrett. Do you want to say your name?
Yeah, my name is Bob Barrett.
And where were you born, Bob?
Cleveland, Ohio.
When were you born?
November 7th, 1927.
And what's your permanent address?
My permanent address is 5668 Airdrome Street, Los Angeles, California, 90019.
Okay. As you know, I took your photograph for this book that I plan to call Attic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to have 50 addicts in this book. And your photograph on one page and basically your story on the other page.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have done an awful lot of talking, so I might have to have more than one page.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I'm going to edit this down. I haven't really thought about it too much. But the one thing I've done similar is I photographed everything the same way and have to tell their story. It's actually kind of like a self-portrait of myself, photographing all these people and their stories and everything, because I'm an addict. I can identify with practically everybody. But I'd just like you to share about your childhood, anything that's important in your life, your spiritual path today, basically what happened, and what you would think would be important for the next year about your life. What message you'd like to share about the great society today, and also that pain. So basically, do whatever you want. And don't worry about saying, talking about the fellowship ring, because that I'm going to delete the actual name of the lead program for Recovering Addicts, the fellowship program, all that kind of stuff.
And that's a broad scope, sure. So that's a lot of material. not a lot of material, but I'm just saying it could be, you know, because I think every person's probably story within itself could be a story, you know.
Yeah, but a lot of people, some people are also in different areas in their recovery. And
very
some
true.
People more simpler, some people get obsessed about how bad they were. Some people keep it short and sweet, but a lot of people have talked about the basic problems of addiction. And
well, yeah, that's I understand. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. You know, I think you know one of the things you're talking about addiction. When you said as to where we came from or where we come from. And how we arrive at Narcotics Anonymous, or where we arrive at a program of recovery. After considerable amount of events that usually occur in our lives.
I basically want to know what happened in your life. And,
That's what I'm just trying to get. Yeah, I'm trying to get you saved. We're talking about. From as far back as I remember, there was always a case of my needing attention. I think was one of the great first thing I can recognize now, you know, or looking back, is that that's what I was seeking. I was seeking this attention. And I think more specifically, I think I was seeking attention from a mother rather than anybody else. I don't know if that was transferred in many areas, probably. Over a period of time, and it has been transferred in many areas. But I think one of the things that seemingly kept cropping up was that I was always trying to seek this attention by whatever means. You know, the thing of, I didn't understand what was going on at the time it was going on, but yet still, you say, most of these things in retrospect, you say that we find out at another time about what occurred. or how did I perceive things at the time that they were coming along. I grew up in a broken house or a home place where the father was not present, or the father left early when I was very young. You know, my brother and I, you know, was kind of together with a mother that had to support two kids during hard times, during the Depression. And I knew nothing about the Depression, you know, what should I know about the Depression? I didn't know if there was beans on the table and, you know, a roof over my head, you know, like, hooray, you know. But I know during that period of time, I seemed to get hurt or was sick on quite a few occasions where Mom would, you know, have to attend to my illnesses, you know. And I kind of become dependent upon that, you know, and I think that I was left with a number of babysitters that, you know, that seemed to me that was attentive or non-attentive but at any given time. And I might even say I probably, you know, as they looking back now, I just said, as far as my memories can serve me, you know, it's become a thing that I wanted Mom's attention. You know, she said, I had had a kind of need to have that closeness. And I can't remember being that close in terms of Mom, you know, on her own, you know, just saying her baby boy, so to speak, you know. It seemed wasn't there. It just seemed to be elsewhere. At least that's what was my perception of what was going on. So, you know, it was a pretty consistent thing there, I said. And then I had a half-sister that came along 4 or 5 years later. That really did take the focus off of me. You know, I was not the baby anymore. I wasn't the kid on the block anymore. And Mom didn't have time for this baby anymore, you know. So I don't know if I got into any more illnesses or got sicker any other occasion, but it was always the case of that's how I did get the attention that that's how I got it. You know, get sick, get hurt, and I got some attention. And there was, you know, seemingly, as I said, that's how I kind of sought my attention at the time. I think I had, you know, enough fears, you know, in the process of unfounded fears. I don't know, feeling of abandonment or anything of that nature. I seem to be, you know, in many ways pretty sharp in terms of being able to learn or catch on to things. And so I didn't have much problems as far as initially in school even, you know. I could adapt very easily, you know. It's called what do you want, how you want it done, and I can do it, you know, that kind of thing. You know. I had a tendency to do it my way, you know. It was kind of resistance. You tell me one way to do it, and I want to still do it my way. So I would run probably some conflict in that regard, because it was always a case of the instructions were, this is the way it's supposed to be done, and Bob would want to do it his way. So Bob used to get his ass considerably when he got home, because he wanted to do it his way, you know. Probably couldn't understand. He said there was not no communications. Now that I can understand as to why I did things or didn't do things, it was just called Mom said don't do it that way, you know. Or Mom didn't give me no reasons for why not to do it that way. It was called Mom, that was Mom's way, you know, and that's the way it was done, you know. And if you didn't do it Mom's way, you're going to get your ass with it, you know. So I was seeing that I was pretty consistent, you know. I was going to get my ass whipped off consistently, you know. And so it was a case of, you know, always, when I think we moved, I think considerably in some ways, because it was always a case of living, from, I guess, from hand to mouth, or living under those type of conditions of poverty that when a family got larger, you had to find another room, and it was always the case of finding larger quarters to take care of more kids, to feed more mouths, and it was always a case of seemingly not enough. So, I think I shut down pretty early as far as how I felt and what was going on, because I probably didn't feel that nobody understood anyhow, or didn't care, you know. It was always a case of mom's rule, you know. It wasn't the case of how you feel, or what you're supposed to feel, or what you're supposed to be doing. This is the way it's done, and this is how you're supposed to feel, and why aren't you feeling that way? And if I didn't feel that way, or respond in a certain way, I seemed to be out of left field. So I probably shut down. You know, my reactions was to say, why, what's the use? And it wasn't particularly, I was a bad kid as far as neighborhood and so forth concerned. I got into a reasonable amount of difficulties with, as a kid growing up, you know, being at the wrong place at the wrong time, doing the wrong things, you know. So growing up was, you know, kind of like, I guess, just a kid's experience, but it seemed I was never satisfied with whatever the condition was going on. I was never satisfied. I don't care what it was. It was my birthday, and I had all the presents. It was Christmas. It was still, I didn't have the right things or enough things or whatever the case may be, and I still wasn't never satisfied. I wanted more, less, or otherwise, you know. It was always a case of never being satisfied. I wanted different. I wanted to be different. You know. I wanted conditions to be different. You know, one of the things, you know, that popped up for a lot of years was wanting pops in the house, wanting a father figure. You know, everybody around the neighborhood, most of them had fathers in the family. They take care of them, good or bad or otherwise, they were there. You know, and we had a stepfather who moved in sometime. Oh, and probably mid-teens, it was not satisfactory of being a surrogate father, so to speak. As far as I'm concerned, there was a lot of resentment that he was, once again, taking my attention away, demanding things that I didn't feel he had rights to demand. My father, personally, you know, like I've seen him two or three times in a lifetime, and it was always a case of just going to visit my aunt's house or something to see old dad, you know. But it was always this desire of wanting, thinking that if he was there, things would be different, they would be better, and they'd be okay, and da-da-da-da. And you know, looking at it today, he said that might not be at all so. It could have made it worse. You know, because I didn't know him, didn't know why they broke up in the first place, and know nothing about the conditions of his living or his attitudes or nothing, you know. So I only can surmise that, you know, like, if he were there, my old man were there, we would have took care of business, or things would have been different, or I don't know, you know. But it was always that kind of thing, like, in the back of my mind growing up, that, you know, if Dad was there, you know, if Dad could be there, the conditions would have been different, and things would have been better, and then, you know, and so, you know, the first thing I do, I put blame on moms, right? Mom should have done something different. She should have done better. She doesn't have it, you know, just on and on. My head, you know, is usually talking about your head out to get you, you know, like, you grew up with your thoughts always somewhere else. No, not in the now. It was always somewhere else. I'd be in school, you know, and my head would be out the window. You know, just not would not be in what was going on in school. You know. I learned one thing in the school process, and, you know, that once I got into doing some reading, that I could escape in books. And I found that was a great escape. You know, I could get in books and, you know, get into fantasy land and take trips, you know, in these here books. You know. So that became a kind of an out in a way, you know, just to get off in a book, you know. Take a trip, you know. I don't care what kind of book it was, funny book it could be, you know, me and Batman going on a trip, you know, me and Superman, Shazam, and what, and Captain Marvel, you know. I could go on a trip, I get in a book and just, you know, be somewhere else, you know. You're totally absorbed in it, you know, just submerged in that moment, you know. And, you know, that was, you know, kind of a learning process, I would say, if I could have probably applied it in a more useful manner, perhaps. It probably would have been more beneficial, you know, over a period of years, you know. But that was one of my great escapes for a long time, you know, was books. One of the things is, I didn't have too much problems with school. You know, I could get passing grades, you know, no great grades, but passing grades, you know, it's just enough to get by. I would do enough to get by. And it was not with the least amount of effort. You know, not a whole lot of effort that was involved in the process. You know, it was just a matter that, it's really, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, like you say, I realized today, you know, perhaps if I had applied myself, you know, to the subjects at hand and done all those types of things, and said, I probably could have made excellent grades, or I could have learned what was I was supposed to be learning, you know, because I used a lot of shortcuts. I used, part of my shortcomings was shortcuts. Get to the destination with a shortcut, why not use it? You know, all this in between shit is bullshit, you know, screw it, you know. I'll find many years later that, you know, like very often the stuff in the center is more important than the beginning and the end, you know, because that's where the substance is, you know. But if I could get by with this other shit, you know, like that's all you're supposed to do, get by. But those are my kind of learned, you say, you know it, kind of knowing it now, and then you did not know it because it didn't concern you about dealing in those types of things, you know, all the types of things. So, get back, you know, make it to the end of the road, by whatever means. So you learn a lot of bad processing. Ideas or principles or philosophies, you know. And I think, you know, we were talking about the non-communication in the household with no one, you know, in terms of how you feel, what's going on, and just life itself and life in general, you know. It wasn't something that was discussed, you know. A lot of things that you learn how to do, you know, you learn how to lie, you learn how to cheat, you learn how to scheme. Those are things that I found myself doing sometimes, probably for no reason, but thinking that that was the way to do it. You know, like, that's the way to do it. Lie, cheat, scheme. And a lot of that was going on in the house too, you know, during the time, you know, like it was the case of Bill Clinton coming. Mom telling me, hey, go tell him that I'm not home. Tell him I'll pay him next week. So, hey, that's when you do it, you know. And not just she could have done any different anyhow. She went to the door and told him, and said, I ain't got the money. You know, but it was always the case of just telling him, you know, like, the money's in the mail, or, you know, or do it next week, or whatever the case may be. So you learn how to lie, and you learn, you know, like, if you can get away with go to the store and then say if you can get some way you can get a pound and a half rather than a pound for the same amount, you know, you take that, you know it's cheating, you know, because during the time, those particular time, things were not packaged, and most of the things was in bulk, and there was no ways that you pull little cheats, you know, so you pull little cheats, you know. So you learn out of them little things, you know, these things. That's maybe not acceptable, it wasn't, but he wasn't saying it was unacceptable. So, and sometimes, you know, you felt that telling a lie would, it just seems to be the thing to do. You know, it make it sound, when you, especially when I was in the wrong, I used to build a lie. I could build a lie, boy. I'd be on my way home about building a lie. By the time I got home, I'd have it down, home down smooth, baby. You know, how it happened and what the circumstances were, you know, and I have such a story put together that, you know, like, maybe looking back on it today, I say it was too elaborate, you know, it was too letter perfect. No wonder that very often can be seen through, it was too letter perfect, you know, everything was 50 pieces, you know, how you just scheme, you know, like, what was that, was it, oh, this is too much of that, you have all answers, you know, you just get the answers down pat, you know, so when they shoot one of them, you got one for them, you know. So, I probably, in many ways, you know, with the case of never feeling like I was enough in many respects to what was afforded to the world around me. Probably not living up to my own expectations of who I am and what was supposed to be going on with me. Thinking I should do better or be better or be in a better place or whatever the case is. Feeling in some ways probably that I was capable of better things, but never seeming to be able to achieve or thinking it was worthwhile, for what, you know, the kind of like attitude for what, you know, it's not appreciated, it's, it won't do me no good, screw it, it's just kind of an attitude, you know, that went along with it. But along with that, I think it, you know, in some ways, you know, I was not what you might call the bad kid. Fact is, in many ways, I probably was, to some degree, was a kind of a good kid in the neighborhood. You know, joined the Boy Scouts, you know, and get to be scout leader and get my troop together and be playground counselor and take troops out to whatever, organize the shit, you know, and do those types of things, and probably done quite well, you know. Made friends fairly well with most of the kids. I didn't have too many problems with the neighborhood kids, you know. We pretty much lived pretty much kind of the same life, and we had, you know, kind of the same existence, Georgia was kind of grew up in singular type households, so we get along fairly well, you know, as far as making friends and being a friend with my partners and friends and neighborhood. But always, you know, it's kind of like the thing, not feeling that there was enough or there was something missing. I wanted to be still not satisfied where I was, wanting to be somewhere, doing something. Yeah. So when it came time for, not time for, I'd say World War II, I think, came about, and it kind of was, a lot of transitions took place, so it was a lot of thought about maybe going to service, and a lot of them was getting drafted or becoming of draft age, and so most of my running partners and all that I went to school with and everything, and we were right there at that cutoff age going to join the service, you know, getting drafted or volunteering, whatever the case may be. And it served to be a purpose of, for me to join the service. I've always wanted to run away from home. I used to have great fantasies about running away from home, but I never took it upon myself to run away because I had no place to run. We were kind of an isolated family in a sense of speaking. My mother was not close with her relatives, and for a while, from an early age, it said the father relatives were, well, semi-close, you know. We used to go visit occasionally, but that was about it, you know. So I had no grandparents that were local that I could say run to grandma's house or grandpa's house, and no aunts and uncles available to run to none of their houses. So it was always a case of, when I even contemplated run away where, you know. I guess there was something in me to say that if you got to run away, you got to run to something. Or have some place to run to, just get out of the street and go. You know, have something in purpose or way in mind to go to. You know. And I never had the, you know, that particular thing, so I was never foolish enough to just to say, pack up my little thing on the poles, on a stick, on and get out and say, get in the street, you know. We never got out of that, you know, around saying, I'm going to run off that way. But I would used to sit on the shitter on many a thing, you know, after I got my ass whipped or got some discipline of some kind and contemplate, I got to get out of here. You know, a lot of that, I got to get out of here. You know. I don't know where I was going, but I had to get out of there, you know. So it seems that it was such an opportunity, you know. You spend a couple of years learning how to work in part-time jobs and earn a little money, and you know, and all those kinds of things that you know that afford you a certain amount of freedom of activity, you know. So military, you know, became an option, you know. My running partner at the time, you know, like he was a draft day and I was a few months younger than him, so we both went down and volunteered. So we went off to the Army. Now, previous to that, I had drank on a few occasions, but it was a case there was no drinking in the house, and I didn't have a whole lot of contact or knowledge about what drinking was about. I used to see him stand on the corner, you know, and partying and those type of things. Occasionally go to team parties where they were drinking, but I didn't have no great interest in drinking at the time. A sip of wine or something. And that was it, because I had a lot of fear of moms, for one thing. I carried fears of mom for a long time. What will she say? What will she do? How will she react? She sometimes get very irrational in her anger, you know. And just go off on it. You know. Yeah, just go off. So, you know, I didn't try to carry nothing to disrupt the harmony of the house if I could help it, you know. So, the time and occasion to get to go to service, you know, was a time to. I had become, you know, a man. You know, automatic. It was just one transition. It's just a matter of you join the service, you're a man. Right? And I knew about the normal process of growing up and in that issue. I knew about what responsibility a man is about, you know. You just arrive at a certain age and you take on, you're a man. You do all the things men do. Especially if you're not under the watch of eye, nobody should tell you not to do it, you know. And it seemed to be, you know, as I say, seemed to be, because it seems how narrow my vision was in terms of things going on around me. I know everybody in the military didn't drink or run the street and had, you know, chase hoes all night long and all that shit. But we always think it's that everybody was doing it. Because some people I ran with, we done it. So you say there was a whole platoon, you know, let's say 70-some people in a platoon. First thing you think is everybody doing it. No, it's just four or five of them used to run around together, and we used to do it. And so it was always a case of looking for some excitement, you know. It was a case of let's go out and have some fun. And for the dude, just get loaded. And first thing getting loaded on was alcohol. You know, alcohol seemed to be the fluid of the time, you know, like that's what you do. At the end of the day, you get your nickel and dime together, get your jug, and see how many jugs you can get together so you can get your head bad so you can go out and have a good time. You know, you just go out and just, you know, get loud and boisterous and challenging, and, you know, and just you don't really feel your oats and develop philosophies that you could not live by, you know. Derivatives you can buy around the counter. And so I mixed and matched and put together, you know, and played all them things, you know, that that's going to get you fucked up, you know, in the long run. And that could be it. Sticking needles in my arm first. I start smoking this year, too. I smoke an opium, start smoking heroin, too, the same way. Hold it! Yeah. But it was always a case of, you know, big thing is that if you don't have nothing to use, and, you get these here funny feelings called withdrawal. You know, and you don't know how using, you know, with you, you know, they not talking about withdrawals and no long-term effects or drug addiction because they didn't know no more about than I did. You know, these we're talking about this in the 40s. You know, even the places they were studying, they... So you know the people in the street that knew nothing very, very low about drug addiction, they know that you didn't have none, you got sick. Progression of a disease was or any of them. I just knew that one day I woke up and we had been shipped somewhere else and supply, and I was sick in the dog. I want to know what was wrong with me, you know. And I was hip enough to tell me and say, hey, man, you sick. What's that? You know. He proceeded to tell me about how to learn about the world of substitution. Learned that, you know, morphine's a hell of a damn substitute for her. You know, works just as well. You know, and in the military they had a lot of it. You know, packs around. You know, and so they short a lot of medical packs. You know, and because we learn how to use it. And I kind of one of these things, you know, like I thought through Korea, you know, probably as I would say in many ways by being loaded. You know, I had, you know, partners and things getting shot up, blown up, and everything else. I felt guilty because I did, you know, I was loaded most of the time. Yeah. I had to do, you know, to get through, you know. It wasn't that I was running away from anything. It just seemed that I was never in the wrong place at the right time, whatever the case was, you know. But I got away, you know. But I still got away, you know. So, I've, you know, cooked the number of habits in transit. You know, we move from one place to another, and usually they put you on boats for long trips, you know. Places you're on boats for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, and you have to kick a habit, or you get a chance to get miles in between, so are you able to kick a habit until you get to where your next source of duty station. And there was a kind of funny thing, you know, that there are periods of time, a couple of periods, they didn't make whether it was legal or not, it was all time. The disease catch up with you where you, you know, pass. No excuses, no escapes, and everybody know you got a problem before you do. Yeah. of the things that you're doing and what's it was still pretty loud, right? Or we're near the end.
No, we can flip it over. When it stops. I said we can flip it over.
Oh, yeah, I know, but it hadn't got to the end, though. I think she looked concerned like it had already got to the end and didn't come up with
something. Because it wasn't going around when I looked at it.
It wasn't.
Okay. That's real strange. But I got the feeling it wasn't going around and it was stopped.
She had a bad tape.
Oh, it's a cheap tape.
Oh, okay. Wait a second.
Before you go on, I was the ambassador's son. So we're talking about living overseas.
You know what I'm talking about. I can identify it. It just kind of seems there's greater liberties to get off into a lot of little shit, you know, off in the back streets and rooms and houses and places that,
No laws.
Yeah. It seemed though, you know, the local constabularies and things didn't fuck with people, you know, from a foreign country, so to speak, and, you know. Although, like in France and places like that, I've been on many raids where they run in on places and check all your identification papers and all that shit, you know. And I was always on the fringe, you know. It's kind of like on the fringes of a lot of shit, you know. Underground shit, you know. And you turn that cool off a little bit, man. It's a little too cool. Yeah, but, you know, talking about growing up under those conditions, you know, it's the disease was progressing because, you know, just talking about the activities and the things that I was involved in kind of spoke to that, you know, that I didn't even understand that was going on, progression of disease. You know, I knew nothing about no progression. I just knew that I was doing a lot more bizarre things to acquire the drug. I was taking greater risks. And I used to think, you know, at one time, you know, like, well, nothing to it. It's just like going to the store, you know. Just go down and get your shit, you know, and have some, and go and get your day done, you know. Or whatever, you know, and just take everything. And then it gets to be more hassle. Or you find, having to steal more shit or do more manipulations in order to get it. People being concerned that certain things weren't getting done or they were being, or they was seemingly had you under kind of a watch, you know, checking out what was going on. And it gets down to a place where, as I said, the shit hits the fan where you find that you just can't maintain. You know, where they say the connection gets too far away or apart. Many things start to occur. You know, the addiction reaches a place where you don't give a damn what you got to do. You just call feed me, you know, and you have to go out there and feed you. You know, the monkey calling wants his food. Shit, man, he'll kick your ass out of bed and get you in the middle of the night and send you off on one of them journeys. You know, and I find myself running around in the back streets and things, you know. And, it's very conspicuous, you know, when got to a place where you, if you're in uniform and you've got a military vehicle and you're in these places like Japan and the back streets and things, you run down in back streets and things, you become very suspect, you know. And people start watching you. So, make a long story short, the short was they tightened up this here Japanese girl, you know, that I'd been scoring or whatever from, you know, that I used to send out to score it all the time. So they got her, but they busted her, and who was this soldier you've been out, went out to get the gym for, you know, and all this shit. So they gave her $25 to turn me in, you know. So, you know, later, you know, nice, you know, it was set up, you know. So,
made the door. He brought me the stuff, and went on, took off, went back to the base and everything, and CID is sitting there waiting. Dead and hit. Pocket full of dope. Very simple.
So, needless to say, the results of that was, you know, like, you know, even in that insanity, you know, it was called restricted to quarters at first, and that didn't work. Well, I was still running out. I had a whole access to a whole motor tool. I had a whole regimental motor pool I ran, you know. So I had vehicles. One of those things is, you know, not have vehicles, you know, I had vehicles. I could go, you know. But, so they had locked me up for real, you know. You got to put you under lock and key. You're not going to do right, you know. But as I said, to make a long story short, after general court-martial and the discharge and to the penitentiary and back to the streets, you know, like, I would learn, you know, not how to be an addict, but when your environment changes, the things that you do changes along with it. You know, the way that you acquire your drugs, the games you play in the particular surroundings that you're, the playground that you have to play in. You learn how that game goes. You know? So I had to learn the street game, drug addiction street game. You know? It's a lot colder. It's a lot colder game. Not that it's any different, it's just a colder game. It's very exacting in terms of what you got to do. So, what occurred here, you know, it was a case of I would learn fast. You know, I'm a quick learner. You know, I said, you know, you just, you know. I might stumble around for a few times, but I'm going to watch it and see how the game goes, you know, and I'm going to quick learn on that. So I learned, you know, where one of the things was that I needed somebody to take care of me. That was essential, you know, because I used what right from mama to military, you know, to jail, and they took care of me. You know, they gave me 3 hots of cotton, no responsibility, let me play crazy, you know, and well, I would learn that game, you know, come around, you know, sit around and find somebody that's got something that wanted to take care of you. I don't care where it comes, you know, who it is. You know, like, here, you want, let me move it? All right, you know, shit. I might even have shared part of the first month's rent, you know, or the first meal or so. But that was on a short list because you know what the next move is, you know. I ain't got nothing. You know, ain't gonna have nothing. If you get a shooting partner, you ain't gonna, both of you ain't gonna have nothing. So you figure out all hustles that you can come up with. You know. One of the big hustles I figured out on is that if you could be drug dealers, is top of the line. Keep you well supplied. That's all you do, have a source and a place to get it, and you just sell drugs. I thought that was it. I had a runner. Rod I was going with, you know, like, since all the other games were seemingly kind of halfway playing out, you know, I didn't send her, she went a big connection, and we come up with a bunch of big thing of drugs, and we went into business, you know, me being the best customer. Very often, couldn't keep the money together because, you know, as I say, I'm the best customer, shit. Fear sets in, and all the things, the cops and robbers game sets in. Fear of all your people you got out there supposedly selling drugs for you, whether they're going to turn crazy on you, you know. And you're afraid of everything. You know, fear just... You know, so you got to keep getting chips. So you spent a few years playing that. You know, I don't say a few years. It seems like a few years, but it wasn't that long. Those periods are usually short lived. You know, 2 or 3 months usually is a long run in those particular situations. You know.
then you finally start going to jail. And, because out here, in the case of, they used to just lock up drug addicts, you had marks on your shit, you know. And I was always had marks on because I was using drugs, you know. It was very simple. So, after a number of successions of playing that little game, you know, like, take care of me and trying to do some dealing and learning how to steal game, you know, the burglary game goes, and playing cops and robbers and all kinds of little hustles and con games and it just gets ratty. It really, I mean, it just gets, you know, rugged in terms of to maintain being an all right guy addict. Right? A regular, you know, because you had to be, you know, you had to, on the streets, you had to kind of represent that you was a regular. And you weren't going to turn nobody in, you weren't going to rat on nobody, you weren't going to play none of your funny games with one another. You weren't going to burn nobody, and you was a regular, you know, and hold your bud, and you've done certain things in order to be a reg, you know. So you, hey, you just mean that you're an asshole, that's all it means, you know, but you played a role well, you know, I played the best I could, you know. And you try all the little hustles that you've come to learn and to develop, you know. You learn how to receive stolen goods. You learn how to sell stolen goods. You learn how to do all those things, you know. And, but all the things illegal and going to get you in jail. Bottom line. Yeah. So when you're thinking about them in terms of what you can get away with, it's, you know, it's just an unending thing that, you know, hey, you know you want to get, okay, how much, I promised myself I'm going to quit this shit, I'm not going to jail, I'm not going to get loaded this time, I'm not going to do this, hey, in real, well, I'm going to go, you know, it was almost a case of when things got too shitty or rough, you know, I prefer to be in jail, you know. Then it could be contented with some of the shit I had to go through in order to stay out there. So, just lock me up. Fuck it, you know. That wouldn't be what I'd be saying. I'd just be running harder. You know, like, here I am. You know, be bullying, David. Yes. And so I go to jail. You know. So in the process, you know, we find other little devious manners in order to try to maintain, you know. One of them was... we use people. I used everybody that kept in contact with. They were primed to be used. I don't care how nice I want seemed to be, or they seemed to be. They were going to be used if I was using. Some way, you know, I used to show up at the house, you know, and talk real nice, and be real nice and polite, and all this other shit, you know. Don't turn your back, you know. Don't give me no slack, and don't give me an opening like you got some money or got something else of value that I'm going to run off with. Because if you turn your back, I'm gone. You know, I'm going to get you. Even to the point of the saying, and go deny it every time. You know, oh, lie, you're dead, you know. But, no, that wasn't me. Might have been somebody else. Even try to set it up and make it look like somebody. You find you run out of places that you hide, or places you can duck and dodge to, you know. But in the process, you know, you're trying to find one that's going to be, you know, your hope card. Almost like going to mom's house. You know how moms be the one, you know, if you run out of everybody else, go to mom's, you know. Mom would go for a sad story, right? Hard times, all the shit to go. I couldn't run to mom because I had left home. And mom didn't have nothing to run home to in the first place. That's the reason I didn't go there in the first place. You know. So it ends up, you know, like doesn't need to find me a surrogate mom. Or you find some unsuspecting or willing a participant in this year game of life called moms. Shit. Yeah, mama?
Yeah, okay.
You want to take care of me? You want to help me out? Yes, great. Let's do it.
In the process, you know, you find some unsuspecting woman, man, whoever is going to be the great rescuer. You're going to fix and make everything okay. Addicts love them.
Huh?
They rely on them. You know, not that I set out for that in that way in mind, say, I'm going out here and find your mama to take care of me. We find them. You know, it's just almost like home in on it. You know, like I ran through a mini relationship, but most of them were using relationships. We're going to help one another. We're going down the road to happy destiny together, you know, arm in arm, you know, going to jail usually, you know. And you usually find one somewhere along the way that's more socially adjusted, that will go for a sad story, you know. So I married one. It wasn't my idea, it was hers. But it was very convenient because I was down to nothing. You know, when you run out, you tell me you run out of everything. Huh? I'd run out of everything. I'd run out of everything and just got out of jail. One more time.
Hmm?
And she said, "You and me to the wheels run." Hey, yes, baby. You know, why not? Shit. Pay the bill, write the letter, whatever you got to do, you know, shit, let's do it again. And you drive him.
Can you drive everybody around? You're crazy.
They stay close to you. They don't know what's going on. You know. And I, it's kind of hard to understand, you know, how much they don't understand what's going on. Even being an addict and in a relationship with another addict that was using. Knowing what's going on don't make it no easier.
Hmm?
And I've been in a few of those relationships.
Huh?
This was subsequent to after, you know, going to jail one more time, finding the NA, because she found it, and she said, okay, it's a good idea, because she was always trying to get my shit together. You know, she's always. So we visited many a place to get my shit together, you know, with her always her idea, you know. But what the heck, I ain't had nothing to lose, I had nothing anyhow, you know, shit, go for it. Yeah, shit. So what usually happened was a case of, that's how, you know, I discovered what NA was, you know, NA was, there was some place that addicts went, you know. Not that I was ready for it at the time. I went and peeked in, looked around. Didn't see my kind, didn't see nobody that I thought that I could identify with. I hope to die, you know, because I didn't think they were. I thought they were a bunch of lames. I'd hope to get that shit together. So I just stayed out in the street. And run her crazy. Yeah. In the process, you know, she went and got help for herself, you know, and she made a move that made me make a move. It's called, you gotta get your shit out of here. You got to go.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? And you know, when you ain't got no place to go, you know, if you ever had that feeling of not having a place to go, it's a kind of a desperate feeling, baby, you know? Huh? Maybe at one time you might have had alternative places. You said, "Well, shit, if I went around there, I'd go right there." You know? But you run out of places to go. Well, we burn bridges well. You know, we burn them motherfuckers down, baby. You know?
straps left, you know. Most places we could have went, we can't go. Because we were fucked up. You know, eventually we were fucked up. At least I'd get out of the very place I had a haven for any given time. I fucked up.
So what usually happens, you know, I say, it becomes a case of running faster and going to jail more often, because those seem to be the frequent places where we serve you the, you know, three hots and a cotton and no responsibilities, and you know, you get clean and stay clean for X amount of days, months, years, and can come out and never set about the idea of going to use again. There's always the idea of just going to have a taste for what time, so. It owes me one. Whatever owes you one. I don't know what that is, you know. But it's always a case of just a little taste for a little time. So, you know. And I always ended up going back again, you know, for old time's sake. But this thing here wears you out. I think it's kind of the thing that you say, you get worn out of the revolving door and the same thing happening and seeming not getting any better. One of the things about in A per se was that was a case of there were some directions that I heard. I may not responded to them because I didn't think they were sufficient or correct or proper. It was just kind of a thing that, okay, yeah, they say that's what works, you know. I don't believe it. But, you get willing to try anything. You know, you get desperate, you want to try anything. I was not committed any longer saying that I was going to be a hope to die no pain, you know, because it was it's not attractive. It will carry you to those depths that you know that you're talking about bottoms, just below the bottom. We're talking about you know, sleeping in weird places, in weird positions, and doing weird things that you don't even approve of yourself. You know, probably for you or nobody else around you, even as far as that concerned. But those are the kind of things, you know, that in our quiet moments, and the quiet moments is usually in a place of when we're locked down or in isolation of some type. All of a sudden, we become very clear as to our plight or our predicament. And we can't lie to ourselves about it. And we have no excuses for what's happening. And you have to stop lying to yourself. For some people, I kind of ask the question and say, what is enough? You know, because I had to look at myself in terms of what was enough. You know, and I think what was enough is that it gets down to the place where, for many of us, it has to be a place of almost dying before we get our. And I had almost died a couple of occasions in ODs and shit like that. And I had placed myself in very precarious positions in terms of I could have died on a number of occasions on some keepers and shit like that, you know. But sometimes it becomes very clear that, hey, you're going to die. You're going to lose your life doing what you're doing. You know. And the sum total of what's happening in my life at the time was nothing. Really nothing. No. I'd lost all the havens to hide in, and you know, you're relegated to the street and saying to your best game. You know, and your best game become a snatch and grab game, and all the shitty low life things you can pull or get away with, all that good shit, you know. And you know it's never bogus shit. You know, I mean, hey, what am I pretending? You know it's bogus. And it just gets to the place where you're disgusted with yourself.
you know. And you think, you know, I was to the lowest of lows. And you're talking about the drugs not cutting the feelings and the emotions and the things that are going on. It doesn't cut it off anymore. It doesn't shut it out. It's only momentarily, you know, like a quick nod and come out of it, and you got to get up and run again. You know, party. It gets disgusting. You don't come out that nod, and you ain't got enough to stay, enough stuff to stay in the nod. You have to get out there and do it all over again. So short lived, you know, like an instant, you know, and everything's at peace. And another half hour together, you got to. Got to start skiing. Your head got to go into that mode called skiing. It goes on like turning up one of them timers, you know, like click, 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 click. You know it's got your head. You better start moving now, you know. Mess around there and don't start moving now. And you fuck around and wait till you get sick. It's going to get slow down then, you know. And so you know you got the head. And it becomes unacceptable, you know, to you. It's not because somebody told you. It became unacceptable, you know, like, wait a minute, no, you know, almost to the point where you know death is imminent, you know, it's coming, because of the things you're doing, the position you're putting yourself in, the risk you're taking, not only talking about a daily basis, I mean, shit, just all the time, you know. And I think, you know, that kind of desperation sometimes will, I guess, each person, you know, to his own in terms of where that bottom is, they say, well, will reach out and accept help as it is rendered, not as you specify for it to be. See, it was always a case of me specifying as the help I wanted. I will only accept that kind of help. It came to the case of any help that's tendered to me, I'm going to accept it. You know, I had, you know, said I'd done some peep seeing in A, and they used to stay in touch. You know, and every time I got locked up, they used to write me letters and come visit me and shit like that. But I had never, you know, done anything that he had suggested. You know, very simple. I had never done anything that he suggested. You know, they were full of shit. You know. But I was going to try it just to see what was going to happen. And I think that's part of the thing is to say, draw like the food and put it into the eating, you know, to see what happened. And in the process, you know, you get some attitude changes going down. You see a little light. You know, just a little glimmer of like, hey, maybe, you know, just maybe. I'm not giving a whole lot, you know, like, that's it. You know, just maybe. It can be different. It is a little bit different because I'm doing something different. I think it's a direct result of what I'm doing. Maybe I'm going to explore just a little further. Becoming willing to try just a little further. Because I think it's a place to say you run out of your way, you know your way, just ain't got you into just deeper and deeper shit. You know, my way, every time I looked up, I was just digging my hole deeper and deeper. You know, every time I come up, I was going in deeper. And I had been to enough innate meetings that said many of the things that they had telling me and told me there were happening. You know? It became a thing and say, oh shit, but they ain't lying. You know, they telling me what really is happening, you know, and they even tell me exactly what was happening. So, I got willing to, you know, do some of the things that were suggested just for an exercise. I'll try it out. It was kind of like contemptuous trying out. I'll try it out just to show you it's not going to work. I'll prove it to you that it's not going to work. Not for me. It might work for you, but it won't work for me. And I'm going to do just what you told me to do, so I won't, you won't have no excuses to say that I didn't do it right. Right?
But I think part of that process was what happened, to say that some things usually happen. And most of anybody I know that tried to the best of whatever their ability over the time it compared to nobody else's, that something happened. And, so, you know, I know that there are some attitude changes that took place that I didn't understand. I knew nothing about God and spiritual principles and those ideas, because I had chit-canned all that in my own time ago. You know, I had no concept of God concept. I was kind of feeling there was something out there that held it all together, or, you know, took care of business, you know, but I had no particular God concept. You know. Spiritual and God was the same bag, you know, as far as I was concerned. I just missed church a long time ago. I had read most of the philosophies and religions of the world, and they seemed to have nothing to offer me. You know, they talked a lot of double talk and tongues, and they talked in parables, and they talked a lot of things that I did not understand. So, just by the very process of doing some things, it's a very simple thing, you know. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the steps, you know, some things took place, you know, like, wow, you know, not that I understood what was taking place, because I had no idea about God concept. I knew I was insane, you know, because this shit that I was doing was insane, you know. Rational people just didn't do that, you know, none that I knew, you know, maybe somebody else, you know, but I had no real God concept. I gave it credit that there was one. You know, by the very nature that I had survived a lot of crazy shit, that it was not my doing that saved me. You know, it was not my doing. So I could see one thing, you know, like there must be something out there, you know, that watching out over me, you know, somebody or something likes or taking care of me, because I wasn't, you know, I was not taking care of me, you know, but I was destroying me fast, you know. And I gave myself all the right excuses to destroy me fast, you know. I'd done everything I need to do. I've been everywhere I need to go. I've seen everything I need to see. Look at, you know, life is that, what it is, you know. I had some weird concepts as to what life was about. My philosophy for living was fucked up, you know. So, you know, part of the journey has been, you know, finding out about me and how I reacted to the world around me, you know. It was okay to feel things. You know, that was a hell of a relief, you know, that I can be emotional about something that's occurring. You know, I didn't have to remove my feelings and emotions and put them somewhere else, because you're not supposed to be involved on that level, you know. Somewhere, as I said, I had a bad, I had some bad teachers in that respect. I had no teachers in that respect. They told me to give me a lot of bad information, for one thing. Most of the places I've been, you know, teachers give me bad information, and you're not supposed to feel this, or this is the way you're supposed to feel. Parents give me bad information, this is the way you're supposed to feel, that's not the way you're supposed to feel. I didn't know what I was supposed to feel. You know, they always tell me to grow up. You don't supposed to act like that. You know, I didn't know what to act like. You know, I'm feeling these feelings and acting these ways, and I didn't know what to have to do, you know. So I didn't think he was supposed to react and feel things, you know. So I used to, you know, shut him down. I knew exactly how to fix him. I fixed him up. You know, shit, I don't feel nothing. And, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, that you get clean and say, and all these things start jumping up. Ooh, spooky, you know. Wow. You know, I felt something then, you know.
You mean I'm supposed to feel that emotion? Wait a minute, you know.
You start feeling things for people and places and things, you know, like, wow, I don't like that. Huh? Some of them were painful. Huh? One felt good, and you don't know if that was what you're supposed to be feeling. You know? And, you know, you had some things that started happening in your life, and you start some kind of reliance on this here power that you have been given. You know, they seem to have been given some power, you know. You get powers and you get power, you know, for the kind of thing. And all of a sudden you find out that some things start working in your life that kind of proves, you say, you're on the right track or the direction is right, you know. You start feeling better, you start doing better. And I think that's part of one of the valuable things as far as I was concerned that I found that started happening, you know. I started feeling better. My attitude got different. And it wasn't because somebody told me, it was because I recognized, you know, like, wow, well, that's not the way I usually act in that situation. Or that's not what I usually done in the past in that situation. You know, and I find I'm doing other things, you know. I don't think I'm a trick off I go out and help somebody do something. You know, I used to never hate. I'm not going to call it an electric thing. You know, maybe helping somebody? No. Above and beyond that, you know, on what that is, you know. But, you know, this year growing up, you know, it gets to be, I think, after time, it gets to be an adventure itself. It's not frightening. It used to be very frightening. It used to be afraid of tomorrow. Oh boy, I sure hope tomorrow don't get here. Almost to that, in that respect, you know, like, oh, I don't want to face tomorrow. I think after being around for a period of time, it gets to the place of bring on tomorrow, baby. See, it's just another adventure, you know, another time and space that you have to deal with and say, whatever it might be, it's okay. It's not a case of good and bad anymore. You know, I think it's a case of life experiences are sometimes pleasant, sometimes they're unpleasant. It's not a case of good and bad. And, you know, I've learned, you know, that I can get through things without having a cushion. I used to cushion everything. Cushion life. Me and life, you know, with her. And it's just part of the growing up process, you know, they're kind of growing up. I avoided growing up for a lot of years. Because growing up takes on a responsibility. I have to be responsible when I grow up. I didn't want to be responsible. I wanted to raise a kid, somebody take care of me. And I was, hey, I was 34, 35 years old, and I was still wanting somebody to take care of me. Please take care of me. And I'm not too far away from dead, so I can find somebody to get to take care of me the way I want to be taken care of. I haven't found nobody in that vein yet, you know, that said, you know, I've become the place, you know, that we have, you know, there are many things that happen, you know, that we learn how to live through or live with, learn how to interact with people, learn how something about what love is about, what the feelings and emotions are about, being sensitive. In many areas, you know, I found out how sensitive in a lot of areas that I am, you know. I can get very sentimental about a lot of things, you know.
fact is, I've had some emotions that I don't quite understand. I still don't understand. They said something about that Vietnam wall. I can get near that wall, or that wall, they can be, if something comes even on the TV that gets involved in that wall, I'm getting some emotion, I start crying. And I don't understand what that's about. I've been to D.C. two or three times, and I'll avoid that wall. I'll avoid it. I'll get emotion. And I don't know what it is. And you go up there and check that wall out, boy, and it's just good, It's kind of things like that, you say, and you'd like to know where it come from, or where, what sets it off, And I really don't know. I don't know whether it was the Korean thing, where, as I said, I got out unscathed and so many didn't, I don't know what setup is, It was just one of those things that it's okay to feel whatever that feeling is. I don't think it's something that I have to, I don't have to use drugs over it. Maybe I don't have to understand it. Whatever it is, maybe it's not important. But it's just some things of that nature, that I find I can find have compassion, that I don't understand. I guess this is just a human thing. I guess other people see it also. I'm sure other people talk about it. They can go to a movie or hear of some other's plight, and they can feel very sad and very empathetic toward. And it doesn't make them less of a human being. It's a human feeling. And it's a human experience. I used to think that was, Pollyanna, or babies, or childish, and I find out that maybe I thought I need to learn about being, how to become more human, and not cut off the feelings, be a part of what I am. I'm a feeling human being, it's an experience, it's a hell of an experience, to be introduced to yourself and all your ins and outs of who you are, not the coward that I thought I was, I'm not as brave as I thought I was, I'm not a lot of things that I thought I was, I'm part and parcel of all those things. Well, I guess it's taking right up, especially, I guess, with people like myself and many others who have said that when we think we've grown already, when we find out we got so far to go.
So far to go.
But I'm not avoiding it anymore. That's part of the key. Come with me. I'm not avoiding it anymore. It's been a hell of an adventure, life has been a good adventure. Growing up, even in his pain and his joy, it's been an adventure. And I haven't always been up to the task. It was tuck and go, for quite a few years. All these new things have happened to me. I was resistant to it. I fought it. I just had to learn how to get into it. So, anyhow, I don't know if that has helped your processing. As I said, there's something we probably, we're talking about. If we get into all the very detailed, intricacies of our being, he said we could probably go on and on and on. Because there's a lot of adventures that goes, a lot of, part of us, are less strong around the world. Little bits and pieces of it, you know, that we've lost ourselves in. The areas are still unresolved. But life goes on. Check it out as we go. Do the best we can. Just hopefully we do the best we can. Sometimes we don't do too sweat.
Sometimes my best is not even good enough for me. But sometimes I realize it says, sometimes it says use your hindsight then, you know, sometimes we're just handicapped, you know, we just can't do it. But, you know, you look back at it and wonder, oh man, that's the best I can do at the time. Best I can do. But hopefully, you know, we'll be better for it. Get on down here.
Getting off that fence about the time when the police was about to shoot me, I got clean immediately at the threat of death. As I said, it usually is to the point of death is imminent or the crisis has occurred that said that life is about to pass beyond our grasp and somewhere along the way we say, help. And I think, you know, the response is help is available. And that was in 1961. I guess, you know, and I pitched good that day. The policeman told me to freeze, and I was hanging on a chain link fence.
He was nervous.
There was two of them. They were nervous.
This was wrong.
That's all I can say. But it became very clear that I was about to do what they had told me to do. But you died. You hang out. It's not always at your own hand, do you? Because, that's the game, as far as addiction is concerned. What you think is good. It's unfortunate, but that's the truth. And I haven't had to challenge it again. Plus, there was a few tells me that it was. It's a lost game. It's a lost game. There's no relief in it. A momentary relief that we used to get. Usually that, you know, it's not taking you away from whatever it's seemingly you're going to fix, you know. I don't know how that part of shit.